Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehle 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Meine Damen und Herren.
Welcome back to the German Football Podcast, where we've actually got a full house for once today, and we're all in separate rooms, which is all the more different to usual. Usually packed in. Well, the last time was packed in, sandwiched between Roy and Robert, but unfortunately we're separated at the moment. I'm currently back in the UK, but that's not what everyone's tuned in for. They've tuned in for everyone's most irregular podcast in terms of when we seem to be releasing these episodes, but we're back after the season preview. A lot's happened since then, and I believe we're going to talk today about approximately none of what's happened in the first 3 weeks, maybe 1%, because yeah, we're gonna talk about Roy and Robert's nice little weekend. We're gonna touch on some less positive things that have happened in the world of German football recently, and yeah, just the normal kind of shit show that everyone comes to expect from this podcast. But I shall start before we jump in by introducing my three handsome co-hosts, starting with Colin Moore in air, or up in the air, should I say. Probably coming to you first, Colin, as I imagine this will be the first and last time you actually speak on this episode. So Colin, how are you doing?
I'm all right. Not much point in me being here, but apparently that's just always the case. I was laughing about the regularity of our podcast. Our bio on Twitter says that we're a weekly podcast, which is an absolute lie. I don't think we can get away with saying that anymore.
Yeah, well, we come out, it's released some weeks, so you can sort of interpret the word weekly in that sense. No, that's good. So you've got the best seat in the house, Colin. So a lot of people would pay good money to be where you are, front row seat for the live podcast. Yeah, no, don't worry about that. Anyway, Roy, you seem to be in hysterics over there. Maybe enlighten us. Something funny happened? Is everything well in your life over in sunny Hamburg?
Sorry, there was I live really close to the hospital, and there was a massive rush of ambulances going by, and you wouldn't have heard my lovely voice if I didn't do it. So yeah, just a wee bit late coming in there, but hi, mine, what's going on? Did you just ask me how I'm doing? Because I couldn't really hear because of the ambulances, if I'm honest.
Yeah, we'll take that as a yes, unless the ambulances are coming for you.
No, so far I think they're okay. I don't think they're coming for me. All good though. Look forward to not talking about anything related to the first couple of weeks of the German football calendar, and just thought I got onto the main stuff of our bi-weekly, not really weekly podcast.
Yeah, none of the German football stuff. Exactly why everyone tunes into the German football podcast, I guess. So on that note, Robert, you had the pleasure of spending some of the weekend with Roy. I'm sure we'll come on to talk about your weekend, but how are you doing in general?
I'm doing well, thank you. I realised since the last podcast as well, I've been on a bit of it was a holiday that turned into a bit of a ground-hopping tour, as most things usually do. Managed to get to my first ever European game, Slovan Bratislava against Olympiakos in the third qualifying round of the Europa League. €2.40 for a Staropramen at the game, which is unbelievable.
And what was the result?
The result was I have to say, pretty disappointing first 60 minutes, but the game absolutely sprung into life with Pierre Kunde, boss of Mainz fame, absolutely bossing in midfield for Olympiakos, and Andre Green, an English lad who somehow made the way from Sheffield Wednesday to Slovan Bratislava. Not your classic career move. But yeah, it burst into life. A few late equalised, sent it into extra time and into penalties. And then just to bring it back to the first few weeks of Roy's season, Chak Vatadze, who was on loan at HSV last season, missed a decisive penalty for Slovan Bratislava. So, but yeah, very much a recommend it if anyone is in the area. Obviously, Bratislava, fairly popular holiday destination, although I know not for yourself, George.
It's a shame. I when we were there, we didn't get to a Slovan Bratislava game, although we did time it well with the Bratislava Marathon, which takes place around the Easter period each year, which I doesn't sound like it was exciting as the game that you got to go to, but I'm glad that. And did you get to spread some of our new stickers that people might want to know about at that game, or was that before the sticker era?
I remember the German word, but not the English word. This is very much a Roy moment. I sent off the order to Flyer Alarm of Würzburg and some other club fame before I went on holiday. They arrived whilst I was away. Also managed to go to Austria Wien as well, my first ever Austrian Bundesliga game. I have to say the atmosphere and the quality of the game was pretty disappointing. But the stickers, the podcast stickers, were waiting for me when I came back, and a few will be distributed to Ayrshire and Paisley and a few listeners of the podcast in Reading as well whilst I'm back in September. And if anyone wants some, maybe get in touch and we can see what we can do.
Yeah, I just realized I jumped the gun there on the GFP's biggest official announcement in years. Sorry if anyone's just fallen off their seat at the news that we've got stickers. That probably should have gone in a tweet. But no, just out of curiosity, what was disappointing about the Austria Wien game? I know that a friend of the podcast, Andrew Hunter, might be himself disappointed to hear that. I know he's often championing the Austrian game.
Yeah, the quality of the game was pretty poor. I'd say it was sort of mid zweite Bundesliga to lower zweite Bundesliga quality. Austria Wien also are in quite a lot of financial trouble, which I didn't really know, but they started the season on -3 points and they got a point and they won that game, so it took them into the red. But the stadium itself is quite nice, about 15,000 people, but it was surprisingly empty as well, considering it was a Saturday at 5 o'clock. And also, I didn't really realise until beforehand, but Austria Wien have quite a right-wing supporters group, which is fair to say. But I was there with two mates from England, and it was their first time standing at a football game. So I think it was quite good for them in terms of first-time experience. But it was probably the worst part of the Vienna tourism experience that we had over our time there.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Speaking of first time experiences and standing, I've got a first time standing experience of my own coming up tomorrow, going to Forest Green Rovers against Brighton and Hove Albion. They have the standing section, despite them playing in League One. So I shall be enjoying a vegan pie and standing up for 90 minutes. And I'm sure the listeners will be really eager to know how that went by the next podcast, which will probably be in a few weeks' time. Anyway, speaking of, you mentioned there that they had a right-wing section to them that you weren't aware about. That's kind of what we're going to start the podcast on this week. Obviously, I think we're all probably in agreement that one of the things that we are drawn to most in the German game is the ultra scene, which we have many a time championed, and we're often talking about the good things they do, not just within the stadium, but also things they do in the community and how they are often probably incorrectly portrayed in German and in British media. And how we think that they are responsible for bringing the atmosphere in German football that we all know and love. However, there's always another side to the coin, as they say, because in the last few weeks there's been some disappointing events. First one that stands out was obviously the homophobic banner at Haasvall the other week, which seems to be quite relatively strongly condemned by the club. Not sure if Roy has anything to say about that. Probably could have been slightly stronger, maybe for Roy's career, but he doesn't say anything about that. Anyway, but the sort of the thing I want us to bring up, this is kind of the point of our, of this podcast, is that yeah, we no longer just go through the 9 games of the Bundesliga each weekend. We kind of want to talk about things that we feel more important to us. So one of those is that the unfortunate, well, is unfortunate the word, the incident at the Hansa Rostock St. Pauli game on the weekend, which ended in a 2-0 win for Hansa. Quite disappointing away loss for St. Pauli following the loss at Kaiserslautern. Also, John Verhoek scoring. He's obviously famous, he used to play for Pauli. But I think, everyone who's probably roughly sort of vaguely involved in German football would probably have seen what happened. The rivalry between St. Pauli and Hansa Rostock is one based on the political differences between the fan scenes that's kind of existed since Pauli have formed as a left-leaning club, and Hansa have always had a tendency towards the right. But some people may not know that the official kind of beginning of this rivalry was actually in 1993, when 400 neo-Nazis amongst the Rostock fans stormed the away end and the Ostseestadion, attacking many St. Pauli fans, and then it's all kind of kicked off from there. I did kind of want to make the point, though, that obviously when we're talking about this and we're talking about any negative things that happen, or any negative or positive things that happen with German football fans and specifically ultras, that we're not painting them all in the same light. But Hansa Rostock do definitely have a history for this kind of thing, not just in the game of Pauli. A recent survey by El Freunde found that asked its readers when they travel away to games, which club in the first 3 divisions of Germany do they feel most uncomfortable in the sense they feel unwelcomed if they're in terms of, you know, their sexual orientation, their race or whatever. And 21% of all people asked answered with Hansa Rostock, which was the most common answer, followed by Eintracht Frankfurt and FC Magdeburg. We'll go into what happened at the weekend, but we have 3 people here with experience at Hansa. Obviously we did a podcast at the time, but I don't know, maybe it's harder for the 3 of you to answer because you were there once and you may not be directly affected by, you know, some of the things that were happening, especially at the weekend. But I don't know if you felt, Colin, a sort of a sense that certain people weren't that welcome at Hansa, or if that was maybe something that's more
I don't know. I think it's something that you always feels under the surface because you've always heard of the reputation. So I know when we went, we were slightly wary of it. We weren't really sure. I remember the night before, we'd been to the Haasfall game and we were talking to one of the Hamburg fans, and when he heard we were going to Rostock, he was just a bit like, oof. We joked about it at the time, the whole like fans stalking the railway platforms, and then you get asked for the time and get attacked. And you sort of think that's a bit of a myth. He was like, oh, I've not been there since 1995. So in a way, you try and convince yourself maybe it's a problem that's become better over time. They've always had the sort of reputation, not just the club, but the city. I know you'll probably touch on it, but the issue with the race riots in the early 90s, you know, because of that, the city's always had sort of a reputation for far-right politics. It wasn't really something we saw when we were there. I mean, I remember our podcast after we were there, we were talking so positively about it because of the atmosphere and everything like that. And it is like one of the most, probably one of the loudest grounds in the top 2 divisions. Because of that, it's a sort of, when you're there, it's easy to gloss over the unhealthy aspects of it. Because we didn't really at first person see any, I mean, it was only a game against Dusseldorf, so there wasn't really anything contentious happened during that. If it was a St. Pauli game, perhaps maybe something would have happened, but we never really felt threatened. I think the only time, I remember spoke at the time, that the guy that sort of threatened, I don't know, from what Roy and Bob were saying, it was like, I let him pass, he's walking by with beer, and I moved out of the way, and he was like, oh, that was a good decision, as if he was sort of being a bit threatening. Because I don't speak German, I never really clocked on at the time. That was probably the only real incident. But aside from that, there is sort of an undercurrent, you know, the amount of graffiti around about the ground and everything. You can definitely see how it's quite a hostile environment. And I've seen, I don't know if you've seen pictures of the away end. It looks a pretty rough place, like a lot of graffiti, and definitely not the most comfortable place to be. I'm not sure I would have been comfortable going there as an away fan. And just one final point, because I know the others want to come in. I remember just before we'd gone, there was a lot of controversy surrounding Hansa because of their anti-police banners. You know, a policeman had been killed in training just a couple of weeks before the game, and the ultras had sort of put up a banner mocking the death of the policeman. So there's a lot of incidents in the past, but probably not that we saw first person, but you just read a lot of stories.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned about how obviously the atmosphere was unreal. I think everyone that knows German football knows that it's like one of the loudest atmospheres or crowds in the country. But like in that Elfreunde survey with Hansa, Eintracht Frankfurt, Magdeburg being the three clubs that people feel the most uncomfortable with to travel to, it's probably no coincidence they are also like the most, one of the loudest, one of the kind of most like hostile atmospheres, but that kind of is an atmosphere that everyone enjoys. I know it's kind of difficult that it seems kind of hard to achieve like a really good atmosphere without that going too far. I mean, that there was that leaflet that was circling at the end of last year of like the leaflet that everyone who's in the Hansa ultras block has to read, and it's like things like you have to be at your seat like 45 minutes before the kickoff, you don't leave during the game, you have to have your scarf, you don't take any photos or blah, but one of them is that there's no women allowed in the first three rows of the block. I'd probably argue that it's probably more than that, to be honest, but that's obviously completely grim. But it's difficult. It's difficult because we always like are championing like the atmosphere at places like that, but there's kind of another side to it that if you look at the crowds in those stadiums, it's pretty clear what the makeup is. I don't know if anyone else had any experiences on when they were at Hansa that you want to talk about before we talk about what actually happened at Pauli. Yeah, Roy?
Because I've actually been there twice, because I went there with the guys, and then I also went there as work when the last home game, the last away game of the season, when it was Rostock against Haswell. And that's the first away game that I felt uncomfortable at, but only towards the end. And I think that what you're saying is we need to watch that we don't big up the atmospheres, and just because the crowd's really loud and things, I mean, just assume that means they're all good and everything's, it's hunky-dory to say, but it's because I remember when I was at the game, it was the Hansa Forever was unreal that day, because it was the last game of the season, they didn't really much to play for, but they also had the chance to not let Haswell go up or to go into the relegation zone. The relegation playoff, sorry. And it was very loud, and you felt really intimidated by that, even though it's a nice song, and we've all like said before, we all love that. That's one of the best kind of before game songs for the Stadion hymns. But after, it's just like during the game is fine, and then after the game when we'd won, that's when it started. Sorry, during the game wasn't fine. That was the game that the fans had jumped over the fence, chucked balaclavas on, jumped over the fence, and were setting alight to the Haswell flags. But the thing was, no one did anything. Like, there was no one stopping it. There was one time we just saw like lots of Hansa fans running at the stadium. No idea where they went. And then you heard all these kind of loud noises and bangs, and it's just not really a nice atmosphere to around, and you start to worry then. And then after the game, we won, and it was a big, obviously a big win for us. So we were on the pitch filming the guys, and I had a lot of things just miss my head, like a lot of things be flying out, and that didn't even come just for. I know that happens a lot of grounds, but just there, you felt, because the fans are slightly elevated as well, because there's a wee bit of a gap between the pitch and the stand. It's very intimidating when you're on the pitch as well. So I couldn't imagine being a player, like taking a throw in or anything there either. So I think it's kind of set out. The stadium's kind of feels like it's set out to be intimidating. And the fans 100% make it like that. So yeah, you can say it's a great atmosphere. The majority of the fans are probably great, but it is. And it's kind of hard to keep saying that Rostock's a great place to go. The RC Stadium's a great place to go because so many bad things keep happening. And I had one good experience there, but when you actually were on the pitch and things like that, it was really, I would say it was really bad experience, actually. Didn't enjoy it at all.
Did you not get insulted by an American in that game, Roy?
No, that was Q.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, that wasn't very intimidating. Listen to a guy say, Hamburg, you suck. We got a lot of different things coming at us from the Rostock game. And John Verhoek squared up to our goalkeeping coach as well, which was quite funny. Ludovic Rice had to step in with his Dutch and stop big John Verhoek from going through our goalkeeping coach. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was the Dutch that calmed him down. He could only be calmed down in Dutch. He doesn't understand it in any other form. Yeah, but I was going to say, I don't really like John Verhoek anyway, because I remember he scored, I think, twice in the season that Hansa got promoted against 1860. Didn't quite get the Toye kind of winner that year. But no, now we're actually going to talk about what happened in the weekend. So obviously, like I said, the rivalry between St. Pauli and Hansa is predicated on political differences. I actually remember last year when there wasn't, when was it? Would have been in February of last year when Hansa played away at Pauli, and there was like the Reeper Bomb was like full of police, like completely full, and Hansa weren't even going to that game because there was like digitalized tickets and the COVID thing, the 3G, what 3G, 2G, whatever. But there was like so much police there the whole time. I also saw a documentary on Spiegel, the Spiegel TV did from like the early 2000s, where it's just all kicking off in Hamburg when the Hansa fans came. So there's a lot of history between these two clubs, like I said, starting in 1993. But yeah, so the first banner that came out around kickoff read basically, that to translate it, says, "Your shit about gender interests absolutely nobody. Here we've only got boys, girls, men and women. Scheiß St. Pauli." And then the second one said, "The club without any titles," in reference to Pauli, "that will never change. Instead of a star above the badge, you're only champions," with the female usage in writing gender consciously. So one thing to explain at this point for people that don't speak German is that almost every noun in German, in the German language, is gendered. And that's something that is quite important to get correctly, or to use a plural version using both genders. But a lot of people won't do that, especially if they are of a certain kind of ideological political persuasion. So yeah, that's just them once more taking the piss out of St. Pauli's of work, their general ideology in that sense. That was a few of those, and then there came a homophobic one, which simply read, "Schwule bekommen kein Nachwuchs," which stood out to me immediately because there's actually a grammatical error in there. That's actually should be accusative tense added to kein to make that keinen, as you'll know, Bob. So, but then, Roy, I'm not sure how brushed up you are on the German declension tables. But anyway, so after first, he's shocking me for ignoring the accusative case. That's obviously translates as gay people don't have any offspring. Seems a strange insult, if not entirely homophobic. But then also, I think what has made the news and what is what May talking about is the obviously the first three of those are completely terrible. Yeah, the last one, which was actually underneath that, the banner that I just mentioned, was a banner that says Lichtenhagen with a sunflower in between Lichtenhagen. That's in reference to the fact that yesterday, the 22nd, was the 30th anniversary of the race riots, essentially, in the district of Rostock called Lichtenhagen. It was the biggest racially motivated attack in Germany after the Second World War, where hundreds and thousands of neo-Nazis attacked the a building in Lichtenhagen called Sonnenblumenhaus, which is why there's Sunflower House, which is why there's a sunflower on the banner. With Molotov cocktails and tried to burn it down. Chants of See Kyle, etc. It was supported quite widely in Rostock, and kind of is a key moment in neo-Nazi history in Germany, and people chanting not just Nazi stuff but stuff to do with Germany wanting to get rid of asylum refugees in Germany, etc. So it's obviously completely disgusting that they would roll out that banner. If you a brief look on Twitter will tell you that Hansa Rostock fans don't seem to entirely condemn that in any way, which is even more grim, to be honest. But I think, one of the issues that stands out to me, I mean, obviously we all think that's completely disgusting. It seems entirely absurd that can happen in such a big stadium. The amount of banners that's been just in this one game just to get a reaction from the St. Pauli fans. But I think for me personally, there was no reaction to this from the referees during the game, which draws a pretty obvious comparison to what happened with Dietmar Hopp in March of 2020, where a flag depicting him in cross, I can't remember what the word in English is, sniper.
Crosshairs.
And then that led to that just absolutely ridiculous thing where Hoffenheim and Bayern just kicked the ball around. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge was consoling Dietmar Hopp as if this was the worst thing that ever happened to him. And the game was to all intents and purposes was abandoned, and was a big song and dance made of it. Stadium bands, etc. And that banner wasn't even that big. I mean, the first two banners that I mentioned, the one about the here at Rostock there's only boys and girls, women and men, and the one about the only champions of using the correct gender, they were across the whole of the Rostock ultras block, clearly in sight of the referees, nothing was done. I kind of raised this a similar point when the game got abandoned between Bochum and Gladbach because the liner got hit by a beer cup. I hope that his recovery is going well from that. But that game was abandoned very quickly. And it just seems to me like it's the need to react to banners that there's nothing political about them. They're just racist and homophobic, and most German newspapers have described them all. Well, the one about Lichtenhagen is Menschenfracht and like as an abuse of human rights kind of thing. And it seems strange to me that there was nothing done during the game. I'm not sure if anyone actually has an opinion as anything they want to add to that. But I think we're all pretty yeah, I was very, very disappointed and pretty shocked that I saw. Firstly, obviously, you kind of come to expect it from the Rostock fans, but it seems once again that the fact that nothing was done during the game is, yeah, shows there's a lot more that we need to do.
I know Bob hasn't really had a chance to speak, but I think we sort of mentioned in the chat, like, a disappointing part of it was that there was nothing said by the club. Like, they don't really seem to be very proactive with dealing with the issues. And it's not too surprising. I remember there's a lot of controversy after Rostock beat St Pauli last year at home. I'm sure on their Instagram account they posted a picture of a fan in the crowd, and it was revealed to be like the lead singer of some neo-Nazi band. They posted on the official club account. I think it was actually deleted, but it wasn't. I don't know. It just seems to be that in most cases, if this would happen with a football club, you would see them trying to fight against it, but there's not much hope when official channels, which are usually so focused on PR and making themselves look good, they haven't even really made much of an effort.
Jump in as well. I think possibly, and talking about the points that we mentioned before about going to Rostock, I perhaps naively thought they were turning a corner because I hadn't seen much about Hansa Rostock since I'd started following German football, because mainly because they were in sort of the third division, sort of 2016-17. And then when we went to the game, as Colin touched on earlier, whilst the teams walk onto the pitch, the chairman of the club was making a speech about how mocking the policeman and the policeman dying wasn't right, and most of the stadium was clapping. And yeah, you were thinking, oh, it seems to be a club that's making a bit of an effort. But yeah, perhaps in hindsight it's a bit easier to say as well, because also on the way back from that trip we were wondering about why there was another set of supporters in one standing section of the stadium who had their own carpo and were singing their own songs, and we researched a bit more on Block 9A, and they are, I think it's fair to say, it's fairly widely accepted that they are filled with neo-Nazis in their block. But again, there doesn't seem to be any kind of stadium ban for them, and they seem to be, yeah, sort of as Colin says, they sort of seem to be, although they're not openly accepted, nothing is done against them, which leads to the same effect, or at least leads to the same, yeah, leads to the same end conclusion. So in the end, nothing gets done about it.
Yeah, I mean, so on Monday, the DFB has opened an investigation. Does beg the question what they would be investigating. It seems pretty clear. A lot of people online have been suggested this would, or rather should be, enough to remove Hansa Rostock's license for the supply to Bundesliga by the DFL. Obviously won't happen, but I mean, it's just, you would think that there would be, I mean, it's Tuesday now, and yeah, there doesn't seem to be any sort of comprehensive action done. There's no kind of apology from the club. It's pretty indicative of the kind of culture in Germany, and obviously in football and in the world, that things are still commonplace to some extent.
I know we've spoken about this issue before, whether it's a cultural problem with former East German states, you know, because so many of the clubs where you hear these stories, that is former East German clubs, like Dresden, have their issues, but probably clubs with equally bad reputations as Rostock, like Energie Cottbus and Chemnitz. I know a lot of Leipzig as well have quite a bad reputation. Whether there needs to be something, it seems to be a wider cultural issue. I don't know. There probably are examples of clubs in the West of Germany which have problems with extremism, but it doesn't seem nearly as commonplace.
Yeah, no, for sure. And at this point, it's probably there's only so much that we can kind of talk about it without talking beyond our expertise, because the issue of the divide that still exists kind of between East and Western Germany and the kind of the issues that exist in the former East are beyond our pay grade. So maybe it's best to leave it there, but I think, yeah, kind of speak for us all that we all think that has no place in the German football, football and in the world that we obviously love and base our lives around. But yeah, it's just sad to see when that kind of thing happens. But on a much brighter note, our two wise men. I was thinking of how we could describe you two as a pair. But yeah, the two wise men, the two people in this group, they're actually currently in Hamburg. You went on a trip this weekend, which is what I think is the best part about this podcast, when we talk about our little excursions. But it wasn't without its difficulties, or as the famous German saying goes, das Weg ist das Ziel. You know, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And that seems very, very true of your trip, isn't that right, Bob and Roy? Who's going to kick us off here? Who's going to paint the picture?
Well, I'm the only one that's ever good at painting pictures of my stories, haven't I? But I think me and Bob had said for a while, I'm getting shake of the heads from everyone here. Me and Bob were talking. Well, I think you're including this as well, George, but you said you were out. And we were saying we need to get the first GFP trip of the 22-23 season. And where else to go than newly promoted Dritte Liga side, VfB Oldenburg? Thought that'd be quite class because they're quite close to Bremen. Thinking, you know what? Not going to be that much of an issue. And you forget what Deutsche Bahn is. So me and Bob set off quite early, didn't we, Bob? What did you want to say about 20 to 9? Set off from Holzbrücke in Hamburg, got ourselves to Hamburg Hauptbahnhof, and realised that if you've not been in Germany in the past couple of months, you'll not understand how ridiculous how amazing a 9 euro ticket has been, but how ridiculous it's been because it's not been well planned and it's just been difficult. And me and Bob,
you want to explain what the 9 euro ticket is quickly if people don't know?
I can't. Yeah, so 9 euro ticket was introduced. I was it was July. No, June, July, and August, which means that you can travel the whole of Germany for just 9 euros, and it was to help with the rise of the living costs, and it also giving back from after the lockdown, if I'm right, like the Corona.
Yeah, and you can't use fast trains; you can only use regional trains. Probably an important point as well.
That's probably the most important point that I would have went on to. Yes, that you can only use the Regiobahn, the regional trains, not the high speed ones that you see or you hear about. You have to use the trains that stop at every stop on the way to everywhere. So we got to Hamburg Hauptbahnhof. We saw that the platform. I think, Bob, this was your first experience of the 9 euro ticket, and what an experience you got. The platform is heaving, so to speak, and we had a wee look up to the sign, and then it says Zug fehlt aus, which means the train's been cancelled. And then the next one was saying like plus 40 minutes delay or something like that. And then we saw one that was going to Harburg, which is kind of the midway point between Hamburg and reaching anywhere else in Germany for some reason. And it's the most pointless train station in the world. So we made it there and thought we'll manage to get to Bremen. To get our connection to Oldenburg just didn't work. So I think, Bob, we spent an hour and, 15, an hour and 20 minutes stuck in Hamburg-Harburg station before we had to make a decision, basically, that we weren't going to. I think we planned with plenty of time to make it to Oldenburg with at least a couple of hours before kickoff. And if we caught the train that eventually that left Harburg in direction of Bremen, we would have made it 20 minutes after kickoff. So we made the smart decision to not go. And where do we look on Kicker and a couple other apps to see what was going on in the lower leagues? And Bremer SV were luckily playing at home. against SSV Jarno Svi, and Bob and I were like, fuck it, let's go. So
SSV Jarno Svi, who have famously have also or have been previously been mentioned on this podcast, after clearing up the fact that they weren't the second team of SSV Jarno. They're SSV Jarno Svi is the part of is from Jarno Svi.
Yeah,
it was a part of Bremen, I believe, and as opposed to
Hansa Elf saga.
it was a very confusing time when it comes to the nominative for descriptions of smaller German football teams.
Yeah, so it was SSV Jarno Svi. But before, but I'll get like Bob take over into the game. What you had then was a very cranky and hungry Roy and Bob. Walking around Bremen, which for quite a big city, apart from your tourist traps in the middle, was very limited options for like trying to find places that were open. Me and Bob just walked the wrong way. But I think what's also nice to mention that George gave a lovely spoiler at the start was the first ever GFP sticker was placed in a German city, which was for the numerous people that that guessed on the photo that we posted was, in fact, on the Weser in Bremen. So if you're ever taking a wee walk to the Weser Stadion and you walk along the Weser, see if the GFP sticker is still there. It's the first one. It's quite a famous tourist attraction in Bremen, I heard now. So just next time you take a wee wander down to the Weser Stadion, get a wee snap with the GFP stickers, which come with a nice wee... you wouldn't call it a barcode, would you? Like a Spotify barcode that takes you straight to the podcast. So on your way to the Weser Stadion, you can listen to our fine voices. But we after cranky Roy and Bob made it our way to the Stadion and Pansenberg. I kept saying that wrong the other day. I called it Panzerberg. It's not a tank. and we, Bob, do you want to take it from here? Because we were quite shocked, to say the least, at what we came across.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. I think you painted the picture perfectly, as you always do. But I guess the first thing to say as well, I had also visited Bremen a few times before, including a visit in the SC Paderborn away section at the Weserstadion. So I had been to Bremen, would very much recommend the Bremen Christmas markets. I know listeners to the podcast always listening out for Christmas market tips. But
I famously got to the Christmas markets one day too late. Because I went on the 24th of December, and they were no longer there.
Wow, there you go. That's another thing to that's another thing to watch out for in case for those Christmas market fans out there, is that they celebrate Christmas one day earlier in Germany on the 24th. So yeah, the amount of knowledge that we're handing out on this podcast is pretty amazing. But Bremen's actually a really nice city. Roy was trying his best to talk it down, obviously being a HSV employee. But it's quite a quaint city centre. George, have you got any more?
Yeah, it's the city of Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, this is. I went on a bit of a trivia hunt of Bremen on the 24th of December last year, because obviously I missed my flight back to the UK on Christmas Eve. I had to take a slight detour, like yourselves, by the sounds of it, to Bremen. Bremen SV weren't playing at the time, unfortunately, but yeah, had a few hours to kill stuff before I'd brush off on my Bremen trivia. That's the one. There's a statue of Robinson Crusoe by that bridge near the Hauptbahnhof, where there's like a lake and a park. Yeah. Anyway, probably just edit this bit out. So yeah, carry on, Rob.
but yeah, as Roy mentioned, we made the silly mistake of not getting any food in the Hauptbahnhof or anywhere in the city centre. And it's the Bremen SV Ground, yeah, Stadion am Pansenberg, as Roy alluded to, it's pretty central, actually. It's only about a 20-minute walk down this nice little stream towards just in this sort of quiet neighbourhood. I mean, it's one of those grounds that you really can't see at all. It's pretty small. It's not like there's sort of, in fact, like in Rostock, where there's the big floodlights that you can see from miles around, you have no idea that you're arriving to a football ground. And we were there pretty early, so we decided to go for a walk around the stadium as well. Managed to get inside, and picked up the possibly the highlight of the day, which long-time listeners of the podcast can probably guess. It was some vegetarian food. They had some vegan sausages and some chips for, I think, the grand total of €5. So yeah, absolute bargain as well. And Roy and I were a bit concerned when we first went round the stadium, as it did look very small, and there was absolutely no one in sight. And we're thinking, so we might be the only two who are watching the game. But it it slowly filled up. I think there were just over 500 people who went to watch the game. And yeah, it's a very quaint stadium. It reminded me of the Altona 93 stadium, but a bit more modern. A few steps on one side, a small stand on the other. And the goals, as Roy pointed out, were actually like training goals that you have. So they had like wheels on that you could wheel them away afterwards. So that's pretty village edition, which we enjoyed. Moving on to the game, it's a bit of a cliche, but the game did have everything. It was a very surprised 3-0 up at half time for Bremer SV, including a few dodgy refereeing decisions and the SSV Jedelo manager running after the referee as he tried to go into the cabin at half time. And yeah, I'll hand over to Roy for the second half.
Yeah, I think a few is keeping it light. I think the referee, I think everything came from the linesman, and the referee just kind of was already running away with play, and the linesman was like, hey, that's a penalty, like, come back, like, can you give that as a penalty? Just a couple of times I feel like that happened. There was in the second half, there was two very quick goals, and you're thinking Jedlo, who are a reasonably decent side in the Regina League as well, you're thinking they're going to come back, but I don't know. I think Bremer SV were also a bit shocked that they were ahead. I don't think it was just us. I think they were kind of shocked. Bob luckily picked up was a wee fanzine magazine. They said how they hadn't been in any regional league in over 30 years, which was, again, really nice to read about. I think we both quite enjoyed the Stadion Hefts, didn't we, Bob? Which kind of gave us a nice wee fun fact about every club and how Jedelo, you can't actually get there because there's only one bus that you get. The buses you have to go there, it doesn't run every day of the week. So it doesn't run in a, like, if you want to go, you can. Was it only a Tuesday or Wednesday night, Bob, that you could actually make one of those games at Jedelo?
I think it just said at the weekend. There was no bus. You had to go to Oldenburg, then two buses, and one was not running at the weekend. Colin, do you want to jump in?
I was keeping an eye on the score, and at one point I saw Bremer SV winning, and I believe the goal scorer was called Zauermilch, which is a cracking name.
We both said that.
I just want to know, does that directly translate as sour milk?
It does, yeah. And I think, sorry, I very much skipped over the first half, but yeah, there was a lot of. Well, firstly, Roy and I had a perfect view of that goal. It was a free kick right in front of us, and sour milk rose to the top.
Sour salmon milk.
Exactly. Yeah. And then yeah, for the third goal. The third goal. There was a penalty as well, which the referee said had to retake because the goalie was coming off his line, which you don't see very often. The third goal was because the keeper apparently had when he was throwing the ball out, he had his like foot outside the area, so it's handball, which like you never see given as well. And their huge centre back, George Balakrishna style, stood up and absolutely placed a free kick from the edge of the area past the goalkeeper. So yeah,
was the Jedlo Sime gaffer quite annoyed by the sound of things?
Absolutely.
So so I presume that his name was Sour Grapes. I did have a question. Other than that, hilarious joke. You said that Bremer SV haven't been in the Regionalliga for 30 years. Is that right?
Yeah. So as Roy alluded to, I picked up the fanzine Überregional, which was also the drink stand. for free, I might add as well.
Any sour milk or nothing?
No, it was just Harkerbeck pills and a cola for Bob, who's on a bit of a health.
It was actually not Harkerbeck. Bob, don't want to burst your bubble. It was actually Bremer Union Pilsner.
Oh, okay. Well, the exactness of this podcast is going downhill. But yeah, so I was actually in the fanzine. It was actually mentioning that Werder Bremen and Bremer SV were sort of on a similar level for most of the time until the 50s and 60s, and around 40,000 people used to go to the games. They're either at the Weserstadion. I don't know if they used to play the Weserstadion back then, or the Stadion Panzerberg. So it used to be a very big jewel, but then over time, Werder became the biggest one. And also, yeah, so Bremer won the Bremer Oberliga, I think, like 7 times in the past 10 years. And then they lost the promotion playoff 6 times. And so they become a bit of a cursed team, but they managed to overcome the curse this summer and get promoted.
Interesting.
Interesting.
I thought that, so they won the Oberliga, but now they're in the Bremer Liga. Is that right?
No, sorry. So they won the Bremer Liga, which is like Oberliga level, so fifth division, and now they're promoted to Regionalliga Nord.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, because I had actually read that in the past. I thought they were Colin. Wasn't it East Kilbride who were trying to fail many a time to get out of the Lowland League and kept losing a playoff? Did that happen recently?
East Kilbride, I think I've tried about 5 times in the last 10 years.
So I was going to say, you could almost say that they're the East Kilbride of the Regionalliga Nord. If we wanted to for once do our title as a podcast justice and make some Scottish comparisons. But many people may recognize the name Bremer SV. Obviously, the first thing that came to my mind is that they lost 12-0 to Bayern in the cup last year. Remember that Choupo-Moting scored 4 goals in that game. It's the only thing I remember about it. Yeah. Any kind of remnants of that game?
Yeah, it was actually. Everyone who had a lanyard with like accreditation on it, it was the Dave Pipo-Cal lanyard. It's like they're not letting go of it. So they were all... still living the DFB dreams in Bremer SV, and the Panzerberg would say. But also they did play against Schalke and lost 5-0. But they played in Oldenburg, where we didn't get to go because of Deutsche Bahn. So, I mean, technically we got there because we got to see Bremer SV play, just not in Oldenburg, but they were there a couple of weeks ago against Schalke, so it's fine. But there was a lot. I think one of the things that I said to Bob as well was, I love the most people were wearing tricots, but it was all completely different tricots, and it seems like they've not really got a base style. Like I think last year they had blue and white hoops, which reminisced, unfortunately, the rival of my club in Scotland, which was not nice to see. But they've had a couple of other really nice, like Schalke looking tops with a darker blue, and I think it was really nice to see a lot of people out supporting our local club, because we could tell from when we got there wasn't going to be any ultras. Or there wasn't going to be many fans kicking about. But I think once we were in, I think we, you know, it's like when you go on holiday and you go in the pool, once you're in, it's fine. Like, the same as when you go to Stadion and Panzerberg, once you're in, it's fine. Because it's like, the entrance is like in an underpass, at like a motorway. So it was really weird going in, but loved it. I think everyone was very nice when we got there as well, so.
Near the top of the Finder rankings for tough away days, Bremer SV going down an underpass.
It's fine once you're in, though. It's fine once you're in.
That's actually similar to the Wolfsburg amateur stadium, where the Wolfsburg second team play. It's not on the training's calendar. It's actually quite a big stadium. I think they would play in the
Regionalliga Nord.
Yeah. And that's actually a pretty impressive stadium when I walk past it. But that is that you have to walk directly under a bridge, under a motorway to get there, which is sure to intimidate any visiting supporters and players alike for sure.
Hey, one question I'd be want to ask was so Bremer Espoo versus Jeddah Fife, was that rigging a league in Nord? Because I seem to remember that last season it was split between Nord and Nord Sud. Is that still the case, or is it back to a unified Nord region?
Yeah, we're back in the Nord. Just your plain Nord situation now. The Nord Sud was a COVID measure, but now, strangely enough, we are in the Regionalliga Nord, but with 19 teams. Not too often you see a league with that, with an odd number, is the word I was looking for. Why is that, you ask? It's because five teams go down into the various regions, which means that there's an odd number, essentially. So you've got a 19-team league in the Regionalliga Nord, which means that they all get to journey a bit further away. So they got the teams in Hamburg, you know, Haasfeld, St. Pauli, Norderstedt, kind of, and Ottensen get to travel to the far reaches of Bremer SV, Weiche Flensburg, the current Spitzenreiter. It's actually a very interesting league. I think we've kind of had this discussion before about what's the most interesting or competitive Regionalliga. I think the most competitive is the Nordost, the one that's got the Berlin teams in it. But certainly, it's very interesting to follow the Regionalliga Nord, especially. I feel like we all got a reasonable understanding of it. I mean, you look at, and they've got three, but that there are, if you exclude SSV Jedlosvi, there are four Zweitemannschafts in there from Holstein Kiel, Hannover, Pauli, and HSV. We've got some teams you might recognize: VfB Lübeck, when Dritte League not too long ago, TSV Havelse, relegated last season, and then teams you just recognize from odd Pokal games. But yeah, I'm personally a big fan of Regionalliga Nord. I think we all are, really. Love and it. Great that it's back together. Great, yeah. They've Norden sort of solved the differences.
The Mauer is fake. As they did say, which I thought was a one-time joke. Bob alluded to that they did it for a free kick once, but they actually did it quite a few times. Every time there was a free kick, they would say that the wall must go, and alluding to the wall in Berlin, of course. Anyway, we should probably finish off what happened to the game, because we kind of went off on many tangents. Two early goals from Jeddah Fife, got them back into the game, and then, I don't know, Bremer looked a bit defensive for a while, and then all of a sudden they started getting, Jeddah started hanging everyone forward, and Bremer were getting all these really good chances, and there was one chance that me and Bob literally were like, you know that way when you're getting really into the game, and you're half crouching on your knees kind of situation, where we're kind of like sitting up, and then me and Bob just jumped up, and we're like, oh! At one point, and we're like, we got right into it, and there were so many chances towards the end that he just badly missed.
That was a great reenactment for an entirely audio medium that we have here on the podcast, Roy. It's good that we got to see it anyway.
I have been doing this for a couple of years now, so I've brushing up on the skills.
Perhaps an important point as well, as Roy said, so they scored Jeddah Fife scored two quick fire goals in around 56th, 57th minute in the second half, and we thought, here we go, the floodgates will open and Bremer SV will lose, because before this game they'd only had 1 point as well from their first three games. They were given a penalty. There was a bit of aggro between one of the players and the crowd as well, also because one of the Jeddah players got sent off. A bit of aggro between one of the Jeddah players and a member in the crowd. Jeddah were given a last minute penalty, and the player who'd been sort of had a bit of aggro with the crowd went over and celebrated right in front of this old man, right in front of us. And it very much came back to bite him, because their big centre-back in the 89th minute missed the penalty. And it seems to be local boy Malta, whose name rung out from the terraces. And Bremer SV managed to get their first win in the Regionalliga Nord for over 30 years. So a very historic event for Roy and I to see. And also, perhaps quickly, it seems like Bremer SV have quite a left-leaning fan scene. There seem to be quite a lot of links to Altona 93 and St. Pauli as well. We saw quite a few people walking around with their Stadion Becher from the Adolf Liga Kampfbahn or the Millantor Stadium. And yeah, all in all, great weather, great game, great food and drink. It was, after a difficult start, a very enjoyable day out.
Well, that seems like a logical time to you've. It's been a pretty glowing review so far, but now it's time to bring it down to the numbers, the cold hard facts of the day. Somewhat a surprise. So obviously, it wasn't how you imagined the day going. You weren't even meant to be in Bremen, but this is that time of the podcast where we get reviewing. So we start with the first category, as we always do, with your rating for the food and drink.
Well, as I mentioned previously, very surprised and thrilled to see that vegan food was on offer at the game. Chips were very good. Vegan sausage was a bit dry, but with a bit of scent for Roy and a bit of ketchup for myself, I managed to put it back. Very good prices. The beer seems to be quite nice. The only thing, I had a Coke, and it was served in like a small cup, similar to what you get at under 10's birthday party, which wasn't quite the vibe I was looking for. But was still good. And also the queue was pretty short, very quick service. So I reckon I'm going to go for an 8.
Ooh. Wow. That's glowing. That's really emphatic. Roy, very quickly.
It's just, okay. I think we were the only ones at the time of when we were ordering. There was the reason why not people. I think we were the only two that actually went for the vegan verse, actually, which is kind of, it's still nice that there was options, but there was just one girl with two sausages that me and Bob had asked for, and the rest of the girl was just filled of other Stadion Wurst. But it was nice that they had the option, I think. I think it was with the beer as well. The beer was very nice, the Union Pilsner, which I hadn't even heard of before. So it's always nice when you find a new beer as well, and especially a local one at that. So definitely, I think I'm going to jump up to be 8.5 because I wasn't served in an under-10s kids class because that'd be strange getting that in a beer. But yeah, so a wee 8.5 for me on the Bremen SFL food and drinks. Very quickly served, served with a smile as well.
Well, that makes all the difference, of course. So yeah, the food and drink, exceptional by the sound of things. We move on to the atmosphere. A few words and a rating on the atmosphere.
Oh, I was talking anyway. We as well keep going, shouldn't I?
It's never stopped you before.
No, that's a very fair point. I was made for podcasts. It's kind of hard because, like, you don't want to say it was a bad atmosphere because it was a nice, relaxing atmosphere. It wasn't mental. There was no ultras. There was no proper singing section, but there was actually just a really nice core of people in the middle of the standing section that we were in that were giving it all, and then sometimes they were doing the whole like Prima and then a bit SFAL the other side of the stadium as well, which when five people was doing it on each side is a bit lackluster to say, but I quite enjoyed the it was like everyone was getting involved as well. It wasn't just like a small wee section. The whole stadium was kind of jumping in at times. And Malta, as Robert mentioned, he was getting a rounding reception. And they also had a couple of strange chants, like "Hat es gut gehandelt," after the goalkeeper would make a good save, which just literally translates to he held it well. They did well to catch that. So it's a bit of a strange chant that they got going on there. So all in all, for originality of songs as well, I'm going to give it a 6.5.
I like the fact that Roy's brought in the extra decimal point for this new season as well. So with 0.5. Yeah, it was just an excellent lower league atmosphere. Like Roy's just what you're looking for. Lots of people seem to be there. Just enjoying their Sunday in the sun, enjoying their time, getting behind the team when they could, but it wasn't wasn't too serious. So I'll agree with Roy and go with the 6.
0.5.
Okay. And then first of all, can we have a quick mention for the length of walk from Hauptbahnhof to stadium in terms of minutes? 0. You just give me a,
it was well, yeah,
equal, on, Roy. 0.
It was a 20-minute walk and a very nice one along this sort of canal kind of thing in Bremen. So
that certainly qualifies under my criteria.
I think I would rather have a 20-minute walk than a 0-minute walk.
Would be confusing to just get shuffled in but on the train and you just on the concourse. I'm aware of anywhere that's the case off the top of my head.
Kaiserslautern is really, really close to the Hauptbahnhof, is it not? Is it not like you turn around and you walk 10 minutes and you're there? Like maybe less than 10 minutes?
You don't also
need to turn around. You can just be that way. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure it's very close.
I actually stayed in a hostel in a train station in Lisbon. That wasn't a football stadium. And
there used to be a motorway that went under the old Atletico Madrid stadium. So there you go. That's a nice...
We didn't watch these underpasses, though, you know.
Infrastructure and...
It was
and
made. But that was made. Me and Bob were saying, we were singing on the way down, we were thinking this could be great for one of those kind of bit of the ultras when they're all jumping up and down in a line and just standing there because they're the underpass and it's very echoey. Would have been very nice. But I think... Famous underpass at the Pansenberg. Cracking me stadium as well, just to add that into the atmosphere kind of thing. There was lots of nice like self-made graffiti. I don't know what other kind of graffiti comes from. But there was like obviously they'd done it. It looked very nice. It made it look a bit more homely. It gave it a bit of a identity as well. And I quite liked it. Everything was blue. It was nice.
How many stickers did you dispose of?
Well, I fucked up the first one, so we didn't go for another one. Bob gave me the reins, and I've truly let him down. I even told him that he gave me a wee tutorial on everything before I did it. I panicked because there was a guy standing behind me, and I thought he was going to, you know, hit me with a pumpkin or something because I put a sticker on. So did really struggle with that. My stickering skills got to get better as we go along, but Oldenburg was, as we were there for their first win in the Regionalliga in 30 years, it was the first football stadium to inherit a GFP sticker, so.
Or even Bremer as foul, unless you teleported to Oldenburg, I don't know.
Did I say Oldenburg?
Yeah, you just said Oldenburg, yeah.
Well,
I'm still in Oldenburg in spirit.
That's good. That's good to know. But then we come to the final rating, which is the rating for the match. Roy.
I would give it a pretty solid 8 because it's what you want in Regionalliga. You know, you're not expecting a great quality football, but you're expecting goals, you're expecting good goals, you're expecting decisions from the referee to be a bit dodgy. Referee running away from players quite a lot was quite interesting. One of the assistants from Yedilo's Vi was nearly having a go at the referee towards the end. Big security man had to come in and... say not tonight, son, to the Yedilo's Vi assistant coach. But I think kind of everything, a bit of drama, a bit of nice play, good goals, big massive, massive defender scoring a lovely free kick as well. And I'll give it a good rating. Bob, you quite enjoyed the game as well. That was one of the things you said towards the end.
Yeah, not much to say. I'm not a huge... huge one on quality, all about the excitement. And as I said before, the game had everything. So I'm going to give it a 9.
Oh. We could have seen a 1-0 win for Oldenburg, but we managed to see 5 cracking goals.
Exactly. 9,
God,
Bob.
God's plan.
It continues to be a great evening for the odd numbers. So I think we ought to have a table, really, some sort of Excel spreadsheet. We punch these numbers in a GFP Towers and
request of a retrospective grade change, because I believe that when I went to Fortuna Düsseldorf that I complained about there not being a dispenser for mustard, and then about a week ago I can't remember what ground it was, I saw somebody post a picture, and it was saying that at whatever ground it was, you can dispense mustard with your foot because there was a foot pedal. So I believe I must have missed the dispenser, and it was a foot pedal. And I would like to formally apologise to Fortuna Düsseldorf and the lovely catering staff at the Merkur Spiel Arena for criticising them.
That one goes to the dubious mustard committee. In retrospect, we can have your grade adjusted.
I think I gave a 7 or an 8. I'm going to push it up to a 9 about 3 months. 3 months after.
Good stuff. Well, on that absolute bombshell, I think that'll be the end of the podcast. One of the more mixed podcasts you'll probably listen to on whenever it is you listen to your podcast on your commute to work, on your as you're winding down in the evening, or maybe even on the way to the Weserstadion after scanning the sticker. Which would be confusing, because then you'd listen to the podcast and find out that sticker was placed there. I'm not sure that actually would be that confusing, because of course you'd be taken to the podcast. Anyway, if you do happen to go through that experience, do let us know, because that would show that the marketing team here at GFP headquarters is doing its job. But no, in all seriousness, I think we covered a good mix of topics this week. As we always do, we always go in with no real plan and see what happens, like a bull in a china shop, few bulls in a few china shops. But no, thank you very much for listening. Thanks if you made it to this part of the podcast, and I'd love to say we'll see you next week, but I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
GFP until I die.
The GFP
until I die.